Information discussed in this podcast may be sensitive in nature to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Stephanie Dameron's childhood was different than most, but she seemed to enjoy it, at least in the early years. She was one of six children, and they would live in several different states before her family settled in Maine in 2021, when Stephanie was 10 years old. The next few years, Stephanie and her family lived on a piece of land that they purchased with the intent to build an off-grid home, and they indeed built a geodesic dome, what we'd also call a yurt, and they lived off-grid. They did not have electricity, and they did not have running water inside the home. The family also lived quite a bit off the road and almost in total seclusion. In 2024, Stephanie and her older sister were living with a man they called Grandpa in the dome house, while their parents and their other siblings lived in a fifth-wheel trailer on a neighbor's property. All the children were homeschooled, and they helped their family daily with chores around the property. As a child, Stephanie was said to have loved the outdoors and loved animals. On September 23rd, 2024, Stephanie's parents drove into town for job interviews, while all of the children stayed back at the property. They weren't alone, however. The man they called Grandpa was there, as was the neighbor who was letting them stay on a trailer on the property. But at 3 o'clock p.m., they received an odd text message from their oldest daughter. She said that she and Stephanie had gotten into an argument and Stephanie ran off into the woods. That evening, the family looked around the property for Stephanie but found no signs of her. At age 13, Stephanie had run away a few times before and they thought she'd likely just come home soon. But by the next afternoon, there was still no sign of Stephanie, and they decided to call the authorities and report her as missing. Stephanie had run off into the woods and vanished. Where is Stephanie Dameron? Stephanie Dameron was born on October 6, 2010, to parents Christopher Dale and Lisa Dameron. The family would live in several states, West Virginia, then Illinois, Texas, and finally Maine. Stephanie was in a family of six kids, and she fell in the middle. She is described as quiet, thoughtful, and shy, but also a kid who enjoys being outdoors and absolutely loves animals. In 2015, her family found themselves in trouble with Child Protective Services while living in Texas. As the story goes, from the Dameron's perspective anyway, is that they drove into town to go to Walmart. Lisa ran inside while Dale stayed in the car with the kids. While in the car, he decided to smoke a joint. Little did he know, a police officer was watching them. And as soon as they started to drive away, the officer pulled them over and Children's Services was called. The children were removed from their care and put into foster care for about 6 months. During this six-month time frame, both Dale and Lisa did everything they were told in an effort to get their kids back. They passed drug tests, they completed parenting classes, and eventually the children were returned to them. While Child Protective Services did check in on the family periodically, there were no further issues. In 2021, the family decided to relocate from Texas up to northern Maine. Child Services in Maine would make yearly checks on the family as well. Now, whether this was because the family had a history with Child Services in Texas, or because the family had chose to homeschool their kids, remains unclear. But once in Maine, the family bought a piece of property with the intention of living completely off-grid. Dale wanted to raise his children in the outdoors and in a more simpler fashion without the modern technology to kind of weigh them down. And since he was on disability at the time and only receiving a disability check, he needed to be self-sufficient. He didn't want the burdens of having a mortgage and utility payments and all of the bills that would come with living in town. The property they purchased was located in New Sweden, Maine, and was off the beaten path, to say the least. New Sweden is already a rural town in northern Maine, and the Damerons' property itself was very isolated. The plan was to eventually build an off-grid home and to homestead there, living as much on their own as they could. Their children would be homeschooled there, and they would also be taught how to live independently. Dale and Lisa both wanted a simpler lifestyle, and they wanted a lifestyle they could afford on their limited income. And this also offered up an opportunity for their children to be immersed in the outdoors and not bogged down with social media and all the problems that may come with that. Some, of course, criticized this lifestyle, especially since they had 6 kids. Many stated that the children were too isolated and the property was not suited for raising a family. But again, the family stated that Children's Services did check on them twice a year to ensure that they were properly providing for their kids, and every follow-up with CPS went by normally, and they were cleared to live the way they wanted to live. The disappearance. By September of 2024, Stephanie and her older sister were living with a man that they called Grandpa in the geodesic home that they built, the yurt. The house did not have running water inside, nor did it have electric, but they did use a gas generator for power. Now, a couple of quick notes about this. First, it wasn't exactly clarified why the two girls and this man were living in the home while the rest of the family, the parents and the other siblings, were living in a fifth wheel trailer on or near the neighbor's property. Second, you've probably caught on that I keep saying the man they called Grandpa instead of just Grandpa. That is because he was not their grandpa. He was not related to the family in any way, but he was an older man that had lived with the family for some time. He's actually more of a family friend, but all of the kids just called him Grandpa. Now, I don't know much more about their relationship with him or how they knew him or even how long they knew him, only that he was living with the family and the two teenage girls stayed with him in the yurt. On Monday, September 23rd, 2024, Dale and Lisa drove into town for a job interview, leaving the children at home with Grandpa and the neighbor, who the kids called Uncle. The kids had daily chores to handle on the property, and of course, they had schoolwork they needed to be working on also. Around 3 o'clock p.m., the parents received a text message from their older daughter, Stephanie's older sister, who lived with her. This sister was 17 or 18 years old at the time. Stephanie was 13 on this day, although her 14th birthday was very quickly approaching. The message was sent to alert the parents that she and Stephanie had an argument about something, and Stephanie ran off into the woods and hasn't come back. Now, we aren't sure if this was a worried type of text or if maybe this was a tattling type of text, but her parents said that they'd be home soon and they'd look for her if she wasn't home by then, but they really just expected her to be home shortly. Now, between everyone on the property, there were only 2 phones. The parents had taken one with them, and Stephanie's sister had texted them from Grandpa's phone. And honestly, this wasn't the first time Stephanie had run off after an argument or a disagreement. In fact, just a month earlier, she had run away and gone to a neighbor's house, stating that she hated her life with her family, and her neighbor just really believing her to be a typical teenager having issues with parents and siblings just convinced her to let them take her back home, which they did. So when Stephanie did this once again on this afternoon, they all just figured she'd be back home soon. When Dale and Lisa returned home that afternoon, they did look around the property for Stephanie. They called out for her and they found nothing. Dale said they even went and knocked on the neighbors' doors, seeing if any one of them had seen Stephanie or maybe if even Stephanie had been at their house. But no one had seen her, and there was no signs of her anywhere. Believing that they had to wait 24 hours before reporting her missing, which, by the way, is totally incorrect, and thinking that she'd still likely be home anytime, the family just waited around for her to return. But as night fell, temperatures dropped significantly. We're talking about northern Maine in late September. Nighttime temperatures were sure to be freezing cold, yet Stephanie never returned home. It was 11 o'clock a.m. the following day when they decided to call the authorities and report their daughter as missing. Stephanie Dameron had disappeared. The search and investigation. Upon receiving this phone call, law enforcement did go out to the Dameron's property right away and take a report, and they immediately began searching the area as well as talking to the family and neighbors. The home was located about a half a mile off the road, completely surrounded by heavy woods, a house that you cannot see from the road. So they began with grid searches on the property right away, knowing that these woods could pose a lot of dangers, especially to a 13-year-old girl. Stephanie could be lost or she could be injured, and time was definitely of the essence, especially since she had vanished almost a full day before authorities were notified. But they found no signs of which direction Stephanie may have went. In fact, they found nothing at all. Authorities did interview family members as well, and they learned that both Grandpa and the sister said they saw Stephanie walk off. She had walked off into the woods and she was crying when she left. Grandpa even stated that he thought he heard her say that she would be back. Now, shortly after she walked off into the woods, both the sister and Grandpa said they heard a vehicle of some kind just after she had walked off. Although, being so far off the road, they could not tell what kind it was. Was it a car? Was it a motorcycle? Was it even just a four-wheeler? They had no idea, but they just knew that they had heard some type of vehicle engine, and being that they were so far out there and so remote, they took note of it. Investigators during this time also started speaking to the neighbors. Now, the family did live remotely, but there were others on the road as well. There were neighbors, even if they weren't exactly very close, and what they learned would be quite interesting. Now, one of the first things Stephanie's family had said when they called authorities was that they had already been looking for her almost for a full day. They had been searching the woods themselves, and they had gone to all the neighbors and knocked on doors. Yet the neighbors said something completely different. They said that no one had come to their doors, and they were only alerted that something was wrong when law enforcement came by to talk to them. They had no idea this child was missing. Now, during this time, some of the neighbors had unfavorable things to say about the family as well. One even said that the parents often didn't see the girls and the grandpa on that property, that they would just drop off supplies at the end of the driveway for them, like every other day or every few days. Another neighbor admitted that he had actually called Child Protective Services on a few different occasions because he was very, very worried about how the kids were living back there, fearing that they didn't have food or water. A couple of the neighbors shared stories of kids coming to their house with 5-gallon pails, asking if they could fill the pails up for water because they didn't have any. Now, is this a case of people not understanding their lifestyle and how they were choosing to live and raise their kids? Or was something more going on here? Was there actually a problem with how they were living? So, of course, once all of these stories started getting out, the family immediately took a lot of criticism. They stated that they believed it was their right to live that way, and just because others disagreed with it didn't mean that there was anything wrong with it. The kids were fine and taken care of, and they reminded everyone that CPS, Child Protective Services, checked on them twice a year and never found any problems. Now, with all of the local ground searches happening, now neighbors are involved in searching, volunteers are starting to come out and search for Stephanie. Everyone was quite worried, knowing how dense and remote the woods are in Maine. But even so, with all of that happening, many people commented on the fact that Stephanie's parents never joined in on any of those searches. And with all of the criticism the parents were receiving, it actually caused them to shut down almost completely and quit speaking publicly. They did not want the focus to be on how they lived. They wanted the focus to be on finding their teenage daughter. But as these searches were going on, they were turning up no clues. Even for professional search and rescue teams who came out, those who were very equipped to search the rugged terrain there in northern Maine where the family lived, they were finding nothing. No traces of her, no footsteps, no broken branches where somebody might have been walking. They simply found nothing. They did bring in search canine dogs, and while these dogs did pick up Stephanie's scent initially, they tracked her to the end of their driveway to the road where they lost the trail. This led investigators and family to believe that she might have been picked up by somebody. It was at this time her parents offered up another possible explanation for what might have happened. They told authorities that they had learned after Stephanie went missing that both Stephanie and her older sister had figured out how to communicate with their grandpa's phone. And while they, Dale and Lisa, had believed that since it was an older flip phone type of model, that it couldn't access the internet, they discovered that they were wrong. They had found out that the girls had used the phone after Grandpa fell asleep and that they had been doing this for quite some time. And they were connecting with people on dating sites. They also believed that they had exchanged phone numbers with a few people they connected with there. Now, Dale said he learned this information, but he did not know which dating site it was. He said he learned this information from his older daughter, who confessed that this was happening. He did turn the phone over to the FBI for forensic analysis, but they said they were unable to extract any data from the phone because it had very limited memory and very limited capacity. Now, I do mention the FBI because shortly after Stephanie vanished, the local authorities did bring in assistance from the FBI and the Child Abduction Rapid Deployment Team, also known as CARD. Since they found no other evidence of Stephanie in the woods, although they still were not ruling out the fact that she might still be out there, and with now the possibility of her communicating with others through this phone, and the fact that maybe a vehicle was heard in the area around the same time she disappeared, they had to consider that maybe Stephanie was abducted. And while this still also remains a possibility, no additional evidence would be uncovered, however. As time went on, the weather in Maine gets colder and colder, and survival in the wilderness becomes less and less likely for anybody. In January of 2025, a volunteer group was formed to search for Stephanie and help to keep her case out there. They called themselves Friends of Stephanie, and they worked tirelessly to get the word out about her disappearance. While the case was covered a little bit locally in the media, they found that there were still so many people in nearby towns who were completely unaware that this girl was missing. This group canvassed local areas with flyers, and they spoke to property owners, hoping to get permission to search in the spring when the weather broke. Winter in northern Maine can be brutal. If Stephanie was out there somewhere, she'd need help to survive, or the outcome could be bleak. In February of 2025, Nancy Grace featured Stephanie's story on her show, giving her story a boost in the media. This boost was short-lived, as many of the missing person cases are, but it did bring a little bit more attention to her case. Locating the Lost podcast also spoke to Stephanie's father, one of his only interviews, in March of 2025. By now, Stephanie had been missing almost 6 months. During this interview, Dale expressed his frustration over people obsessing over how they lived instead of focusing on finding Stephanie. He also spoke about what he believes happened. Dale said that after Stephanie went missing, he received different stories from his older daughter, Stephanie's sister, the one who lived with her, and the one who said she and Stephanie got into an argument that day. Dale stated that he isn't quite sure, even to this day, as of that interview anyway, what that argument was truly about. Now, why Stephanie's sister didn't want to tell him? Is it possible she was up to no good also on that phone and didn't want her parents to find out? What was the reason for her stories changing? He also said that it was well after Stephanie vanished that he learned about the access to these dating sites. That, along with the fact that Grandpa and his daughter heard a vehicle that afternoon, and knowing that Stephanie had tried to run away before, left him to believe that she had arranged to get a ride with someone that day and leave. There have been a lot of mixed feelings on this case from a lot of different people. Those who feel the family holds some responsibility based on how they lived and the things that happened before, and those who feel that we need to focus solely on finding Stephanie and quit criticizing the family. With all of this, it's also important to state that a lot of what we do know is coming from the families, the neighbors, and the volunteers themselves. Law enforcement did do a couple press releases, but really, they have spoken out very little. Even when asked for updates, they have kept quiet, leaving many to wonder why. Stephanie Damron is still missing. She seemed to vanish into the woods without a trace, this 13-year-old girl. There have been no verified sightings. There's no digital trail to follow. There's just no evidence. And there's confusing stories. The family has also kept mostly quiet, but Stephanie has a lot of people in the community still talking about her and still working to keep her story out there. New Sweden, Maine. A huge part of Stephanie's story is the area of which she vanished from. Now, sometimes in these missing person cases, the area matters very little, or we might not even know a particular area. Or maybe there's several different areas we need to look at. But in Stephanie's case, it's very much centered on New Sweden, Maine. This small town covers just over 34 square miles. There's an average of 14 people per square mile, and the population has actually continued to go down in recent years. Population right now sits at about 500 residents. The town does have an interesting history. It was founded in 1870 by Swedish immigrants, and it still maintains many Swedish traditions today. In fact, some of the older residents who live there still speak Swedish. The town is extremely quiet, and if you're not from the area, you probably have never even heard of New Sweden, Maine. Even people residing in other parts of Maine have never heard of New Sweden. Stephanie's family wanted a place to live off-grid. They wanted an affordable place, a quiet place where they could be unbothered and do their own thing, and they didn't want the financial burden of a house, utility bills, and all of the other expenses that come with life in traditional towns and cities. They just wanted a peaceful place to raise their children. And they found that in New Sweden. They purchased land and they built their geodesic dome, living completely off-grid. Also completely surrounding their home is thick and dense woods, all of which Dale said his children were used to. Stephanie in particular loved being in the outdoors, and while she had always been a quiet kid, he did also say that she had begun being a little bit mischievous, probably referring to her prior runaway stints. And to be honest, without additional information beyond that, it just sounds to me like a typical 13-year-old. Stephanie's family lived on West Road, and after doing a Google Street View down this street, I can definitely agree that the woods there are very thick, very dense. You cannot see into the woods at all. There is a neighbor right across the street from their driveway, but any other neighbors are not visible from the end of their drive. You'd need to walk quite a bit just to see somebody or run into somebody. Which does make me wonder about those kids who had to haul 5-gallon pails of water any type of distance if they were going to a neighbor's. Now, if you left the house and you went into the woods, which is what they say Stephanie did, in any particular direction, it's just thick woods. Did she circle back around and perhaps come out to the road at some point? Maybe. Are there any water sources in that area? Something we always need to look at. And I did see Madawaska Lake. This is a substantial body of water, and it's believed by some that there were water searches conducted, although when I tried to figure out where and why and how, I was not able to identify any specific location. But if Lake Madawaska was searched, it would make sense to me. It is the largest body of water closest to the Dameron property, although it's not very easy to get to. Lake Madawaska is about 1,100 acres, and it's a popular recreation lake. Of course, in late September in that area, northern Maine, the weather turns cold quick and outdoor activities definitely slow down. Although it is popular in the winter also for activities like ice fishing, snowmobiling, and ice skating. Looking at the pictures, it truly is a beautiful lake. Has very clear waters. It's described as a glacial lake, which would explain why it's so calm and clear. It is on average 30 to 40 feet deep in most places. And again, it's considered a local hotspot, meaning not many tourists know about it. If Stephanie or someone with Stephanie would have walked through the woods near her home towards the lake, it would be about 3 to 5 miles away, depending on the path they would take. But it would not be an easy 3 to 5 miles. There is no path, there is no direct easy route, and the woods are so thick and dense, it would be exceptionally hard to get through the woods. It's a little bit more difficult to identify any other bodies of water, but there are many other smaller ponds and creeks in the area of her home, which I was able to find on local maps. Many of which, however, are not going to be seen on Google Maps or even Google Earth, as they're totally and completely obscured by the woods. These would more likely be a danger to Stephanie, as they would probably be closer and easier for her to reach and come across. But again, all of the ground searches in that area, conducted by professional search and rescue, as well as volunteers, turned up no signs of Stephanie at all. None of her belongings. Just nothing, and not even any evidence that a person had trudged through the woods. There is just no sign of any path she may have walked. Could someone get through those woods? Could they move through those woods without being seen or found? Or even leaving a trail behind? Missing in Maine and another similar case. For a short time, there was some widespread panic that something was happening in northern Maine. Something that was causing women or girls to go missing. On September 8th, 2021, Atin Shah was last seen at her home. Her husband had claimed that he went to go shopping that day, and when he came back, he found her missing. Atin and her husband, Michael, had 4 children, and despite the fact that he came home and found her gone, he did not report her missing until late November 2021, nearly 2 months later. Now, of course, this raises several red flags. Why a delay in reporting her missing, especially when you have 4 children together? And her husband allegedly gave conflicting stories. He told police that she might have taken a job on a cruise ship, but he couldn't name the ship and he couldn't provide any additional details regarding that. It seemed completely out of the blue to everyone else. He later suggested that he actually thought she might have just left him for another man. Those were the reasons he gave for not reporting her missing and for not being too worried about her whereabouts. Police and authorities found no evidence that she traveled anywhere. There was no use of her passport, there was no financial or social media activity, and there have been no confirmed sightings since 2021. Now, to this day, we have no confirmed explanation as to what happened to Ateen Shah, but there are some commonly discussed possibilities, which include voluntary disappearance. Did she maybe really leave on her own? Now, this is considered unlikely because no one believed she would leave her four children behind, and no one thought she would not contact her extended family. Authorities also found no trace of her traveling anywhere. Now, another possibility in her case is a mental health episode. Her husband also stated that she had bipolar disorder and had left home temporarily in the past, but she had never left permanently and she had never gone too long without any contact. Or the third possibility in Ateen Shah's case is foul play. There is just a complete lack of evidence that she is alive somewhere, combined with these other inconsistencies in statements, has led to suspicions of foul play. However, no one has been charged and police have never publicly named a suspect or a person of interest. Now, Ateen vanished 3 years before Stephanie Damron did, but she lived just 10 miles away. But that wasn't all that was going on in northern Maine. 1 year after Stephanie vanished, another woman went missing. The case of Thomas Hoyt is a tragic and relatively recent disappearance out of northern Maine that ultimately did end with a heartbreaking outcome. Thomas Hoyt was 36 when she was last seen on July 13, 2025. She was a mother of two, and her disappearance quickly raised concern due to the unusual circumstances surrounding her last movements. Also, by the time she vanished in July of 2025, this small area of northern Maine was now dealing with three missing women, two grown women, and a 13-year-old girl, Ateen Shah, Stephanie Damron, and now Thomas Hoyt. People who lived in the area were frantic. Now, Thomas was last seen walking along Robinson Road in Mars Hill, Maine. She was barefoot, she was wearing ripped jeans and a tank top, and she took nothing with her. She took no money, no purse, none of her personal belongings. There was surveillance footage that captured her walking alone, which added urgency to the search. Now, there were immediate red flags in her case. Why was she walking barefoot on a rural road? Why did she not take any money? Why was there no cell phone activity? And why had she told no one where she was going? And she suddenly ceased contact with every member of her family. Now, her extended family became quite alarmed and publicly pleaded for her to come home. Now, according to some who knew her, Thomas had struggled with mental health and past addiction problems. However, she had reportedly been sober for about 9 years. She had always maintained close family ties, making her disappearance extremely unusual. She was reported missing shortly after July 13th. On October 30th, 2025, human remains were discovered in Blaine, Maine, a small town near Mars Hill, Maine, where Thomas lived. On November 12, 2025, those remains were positively identified as Thomas Hoyt. As of the latest updates and the recording of this, the cause and manner of death have not been publicly released. The investigation into her case is still considered ongoing. Now, this disappearance happened in the same county as the disappearance of Ateen Shah and Stephanie Damron, this small, isolated rural community, so you can definitely understand why people were kind of freaking out at this point. And even though Thomas has been found, we are still left with many unanswered questions in her case. There is no official conclusion in Thomas's story yet, but commonly discussed possibilities in her case include a mental health crisis. Seeing that she was walking alone and walking barefoot suggests that she might have been having some kind of episode. Another theory is that she succumbed to the elements. She was unprepared out there. And again, we've talked about how rural and rough that terrain is. and also the theory of foul play. This still cannot be ruled out, especially with no confirmed cause of death. During the time that Thomas was missing also, people of Northern Maine were worried. This actually hit national news for a minute because this was so unusual. To have three missing persons in just a few years of each other in a very sparsely populated area of the state. Was something going on in Northern Maine? Is something going on in Northern Maine? Were people, women and girls especially, being targeted here? Now, Thomas has been found. She is no longer missing, but questions regarding her case still remain. Atene Shaw and Stephanie Dameron, of course, still are missing persons in this area. Now, I do want to talk about another case that I can't help but think of while I was learning about Stephanie's story. And those of you who have followed the podcast for some time or follow missing person stories may have thought of this young man as well. And that is the case of Jaleek Rainwalker. Now, Jaleek's story takes us to New York and Vermont, not in Maine. But Stephanie's case has a lot of parallels with Jaleek's. Their cases are not connected or related in any way, but they seem to be living similar lifestyles before their disappearance. Jaleek Rainwalker was a 12-year-old boy who vanished from Greenwich, New York, near the Vermont border on November 1st, 2007. There is a lot to Jaleek's case, a lot. And if you're not familiar, please check out the episode we did covering his story a while back. But here's an overview. Jaleek had been put into foster care at a very, very young age. He had been removed from his mother's care as an infant due to her drug addiction. Now, Jaleek himself was labeled special needs, and he was put into a special needs foster care with the Kerr family. His adoptive father, Stephen Kerr, and his adoptive mother, Jocelyn. Eventually, Stephen and Jocelyn did officially adopt Jaleek. And in their home, they had biological children as well as other foster kids. Now, the situation that they lived in was extremely similar to Stephanie's. They lived in a home, completely secluded. They had no running water and they had no electricity. The entire family lived in one room in this house. The family was also known to be quite odd to everyone in the area, and the kids did not really socialize with others. Now, in 2007, Stephen and Jocelyn called the state authorities and asked if they could basically return Jaleek to state care. They could no longer handle him, and they basically wanted to give him back to the state. Now, the state suggested that instead, they send him into a respite home for a week or two. They were unable to find a respite home to take him, but they did find a former foster parent of Jaleek's who offered to take him for a couple of days. So Jaleek went to stay with this respite foster care to kind of give Stephen and Jocelyn and their family a break. On November 1st, Stephen picked up Jaleek and took him to a vacant home that the family owned in Greenwich. That night, they reportedly went out to eat, and then they went back to spend the night at the home. When Stephen Kerr woke up the next morning, he found Jaleek gone. He did say that he found a note that he believes Jaleek left behind, and he thinks that Jaleek ran away. Now, some immediate red flags, and there were many, but Jaleek did not take any of his belongings with him. And Jaleek's father, Stephen, said that when Jaleek left, he was wearing a yellow jacket. That yellow jacket would later be found in the Kerr's home. Also, Jaleek was 12 and he had some behavioral and developmental delays. Would he be able to successfully plan to run away? Now, in Jaleek's case, foul play has been suspected from early on and is the main theory. There were massive searches conducted across New York and into Vermont. Jaleek is still missing. He is presumed to be a victim of foul play. However, no arrests and no confirmed location of remains have been found. Now, Jaleek's case is definitely different from Stephanie's, but there are some similarities that really stuck out to me. They're both young teens, really. Jaleek was 12, Stephanie was 13. While definitely an age where kids can rebel and act out and might try to run away, running away long-term is unlikely. They typically rely on adults for survival, even if they do tend to run away, they usually return home. Both Jalik and Stephanie lived in very rural, isolated locations. They lived off the grid. They lived in very unusual, non-traditional type of housing with their family, which their family situations could also be considered non-traditional. Now, in both cases, the families lived so remotely and so isolated that searches can be difficult. There's definitely opportunities to conceal someone out there, and it's also an opportunity for there to be no witnesses. Both Jalik and Stephanie had suspicious circumstances at their last sighting. Jalik's last sighting with his father was very unusual, and his father gave inconsistent details and gave stories to law enforcement that they actually determined to be lies. Stephanie was last seen at her home, and her story regarding how she went missing has also changed over time. So in both cases, we have no clear verified timeline after disappearance. And in both cases, their off-grid lifestyles are called into question as to possibly playing a role in their disappearance. In both Jalik's case and Stephanie's case, there were ground searches, there were canine units brought in, and multiple agencies were involved. They searched areas like forests, waterways, and rural roads. Despite this, no confirmed trace of either child. Now, of course, neither case has been solved. In Jalik's, we can definitely lean towards one answer, while Stephanie's might be a little more open-ended still. But foul play is suspected as a possibility in both cases. The public perception strongly leans towards something happening here, something more than a runaway. And investigators in both cases have not ruled out foul play. In both stories, in the story of Jalik Rainwalker and Stephanie Damron, we have a child who vanished into thin air, and years later, still no idea as to what happened to either of them. Theories and possibilities. In some cases, especially cases of missing persons, cases we've talked about, discussing theories and possibilities could be detrimental, either to the families or maybe even more importantly, to the investigation itself. But in Stephanie's case, I think it's important to know what we could be dealing with here. But I do want to mention and talk about the three main theories in her case. Theory number one, the runaway theory. There are a few reasons that this remains a plausible theory in Stephanie's story. First, she had run away before. A neighbor had verified this, as did her family. She had expressed unhappiness with her living situation, and she was at the age where she very well could have tried to leave on her own. She was 13, almost 14, and she was very adept and comfortable in the outdoors. It had really been her whole life. Maybe she wanted to run away and live on her own. And honestly, it seemed like she was already doing that, living in the dome house. She had a lot of responsibility herself, and it seemed that her and her sister were mainly taking care of themselves. But if she did run away, where did she go? And why were there no signs of her found? Second, her home life was exceptionally different and difficult. She was isolated from other people, especially other kids her own age. And if she had found a way to connect with the outside, maybe she was craving more interaction with others. Maybe she was craving to be around more kids her own age. And third, her life living at the dome was hard. If the kids had to go get pails of water from the neighbors just to survive, probably at least a half mile away or more, their life was difficult. If they lived without modern conveniences and had tough homesteading chores every day, Stephanie might just have reached her limit. But again, there was absolutely zero evidence showing where she might have gone, where she may have went off into the woods. There have been zero sightings of Stephanie, And how would she survive out there in the brutal Maine winter without any help? Theory number two, Stephanie was picked up. Speaking of living in the world without any help at all, is it possible that she did actually have help? Did someone pick her up? It's the story of her father and her sister that Stephanie was communicating with people online and exchanging phone numbers. Did she arrange for someone to pick her up? And if that's the case, she would have had to pre-arrange it. She didn't have the phone, except when Grandpa went to sleep. And again, the FBI was unable to uncover any evidence leading them to believe she was talking to anyone. Regardless, her family believes that this is what happened, based on the belief that she was using the phone, based on the fact that Grandpa and sister thought they heard a vehicle, and based on the fact that her scent trail stopped at the end of the driveway, leads them to think that someone picked her up and has her somewhere. Possibly she has lived all this time with someone else in a different location and just has not been found yet, or perhaps this person is now holding her against her will. Or worse yet, something happened to her after she was picked up. Now, we could go down the rabbit hole of this theory, stating that it's just highly unlikely. Statistics show us that. But I can't help but remember the story of Alicia Navarro. Theory number three, the foul play theory. There has been a lot of criticism regarding those nearest to Stephanie. And I don't need to remind you of the statistics here. We all know them. But the fact that her family has not spoken out publicly much, the fact that they have not been involved in ground searches, many people question how they were living, and the fact that they let these two teen girls live with an older man who technically was not related to them, while the parents lived somewhere else, does seem a bit odd. And the fact that the stories have changed a bit over time, the story about the cell phone in particular, a story which the FBI was unable to corroborate. It's all just very weird. But while it looks weird to a lot of us on the outside, there are some who know the family, who have been talking to the family, who have been working with the family behind the scenes on this, that have said the family is completely devastated and broken up over this and just doesn't know what else they can do. So could it have been someone on the property who harmed Stephanie? Could the runaway story be a cover? It might. Or she might have run into foul play at the hands of someone else out there, someone not living with her, someone not related to her. The area is so remote. Did she run off because she got mad? And did she encounter someone on the road who saw an easy target, an upset, vulnerable teenage girl? Of course, we don't want to throw speculation on any innocent party, but for Stephanie's sake, I think everything and everyone needs looked at here. What do you think happened to Stephanie Dameron? Stephanie is described as a Caucasian female standing 5 foot tall and weighing around 130 pounds when she was last seen in September of 2023. She was wearing a long-sleeved blue shirt, blue jeans, and black Harley Davidson hiking boots that day. She has longer, lightish brown hair and green eyes. If you have any information about Stephanie Dameron or her disappearance, any information at all, please contact the Maine State Police at 207-532-5400. I also mentioned earlier the Friends of Stephanie group of volunteers. They continue to work and advocate for Stephanie, and they do have a Facebook page they have set up for her. I will put the link to that in the notes if you'd like to keep up on what they're doing and the efforts they're putting forth finding Stephanie. Also, Locating the Lost podcast had an interview with Stephanie's father, Dale. I think it is interesting to hear in his own words what he thinks happened and what he thinks of the investigation and what he thinks of people's criticism of the way they live. I'll put a link to that podcast in the show notes as well. Thank you so much for listening to Stephanie's story today and for helping us keep her name and her story out there. A 13-year-old girl, now 15, does not just vanish into thin air. She is out there. She is somewhere. Let's keep sharing her story and let's get Stephanie brought home. I do want to share a couple of show announcements with you. The Where Are They podcast will be at CrimeCon this year, May 29th through the 31st in Las Vegas. And I'm really, really hoping to meet some of you while there. Please look for us on Creators Row, stop by and say hi. We are also working on putting together a slideshow and coming up with other ways to display as many missing person flyers as possible. I'm leaning towards the idea of maybe 3 from every state, a man, woman, and child. Not sure if we can pull that off via space or resources. But if you do have any additional ideas you'd like to share, please send me an email. We are also looking for donations as well to help cover the expenses of the flyers and material that we would like to take and to help us promote as many missing person cases as we can. If you're able to help us at all, you can help by visiting our Buy Me a Coffee page or just simply by sharing our information. And I do want to say a huge thank you to Bethany for making the first donation and suggesting some cases that we can promote while there. We are also offering a discount code if you are interested in attending CrimeCon and you haven't purchased your ticket yet. You can receive 10% off your admission ticket by using our code WAT10 at checkout. I'll also include the link to CrimeCon 2026 in our show notes. And if you head over to the website, you can also check out all the other creators and presenters, news, media, all who will be there and see if your favorites are on the list. Again, I'm truly, truly excited to be attending this year, and I do hope to see some of you there. If you are interested in all of our episodes ad-free, you can join us over on Patreon. Not only do we put all of our episodes up over there without ads, you can also find occasional bonus episodes as well. And it is our patrons over there who allow us to help us pay it forward to the families of the missing, either directly to them, a GoFundMe, or to the charity that is supporting them in the search for their loved one. The link to our Patreon can be found in the show notes. If we do have any case updates or news on any missing person cases, we will share that over on our social medias. First, you can find the Where Are They podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and X. You can also find our episodes in video format over on YouTube. This is a great way where we can share more photos of the missing person and help you get more of a sense of who they are. The links will always be in our show notes or just search for the Where Are They podcast. If you have any case suggestions for us, cases from your hometown, cases that need more media attention, cases that maybe had attention but seem to have fallen off the media radar, please reach out to me anytime via the socials or email me at canwefindthem@gmail.com. Thank you again for listening to Stephanie's story today. This young teenage girl, just 13 when she went missing, could be out there and could still need our help. Let's keep her story out there. Please share, 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 and let's get all the eyes on her case. We will be back again very soon with another unsolved missing persons story. And until then, stay safe and hug your loved ones.